Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org or on the WDIY app. Today is June 1st, 2022. The markets were down today, with the Dow closing at 32,813, the NASDAQ at 11,994, and the S&P at 4,101. Our topic tonight is savings bonds, and I know there's a lot of chatter about I-bonds, and I will be talking about those this evening. We will take your questions. Eric is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay, and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can also send questions through email at yourfinancialchoices.com. If you prefer not to speak live, give your question to Eric. He'll write it down and bring it into the studio. Again, our topic this evening, savings bonds. And I thought I would start with this little tidbit to kind of spark your interest. First of all, I had a question already, like, savings bonds are still around? Yes, they are. And did you know that according to the National Association of State Treasurers website, there are over $29 billion of unclaimed savings bonds. I have actually been talking about this, I think, since the start of my career, because I used to work at a law firm many years ago, and that was something that frequently came up. And I do think that probably that many years ago, people did more often have savings bonds. I think we don't see it as much in more recent decades because the interest rates haven't been there and they're not as attractive for people. But I am telling you, this is something you should probably talk to your parents, your grandparents, your aunts or uncles, those people who possibly worked for companies where they did it through payroll deduction. Or back in the day, so many people made savings bonds as gifts for, your newborn or for, various little holidays for your nieces and nephews, that type of thing. There are a lot of savings bonds sitting around that have not been redeemed. They may be matured and not redeemed. And that's what I'm talking about when we talk about unclaimed property. And the reason I also want to mention that to kind of perk your interest is that there are a number of states who have made cases, like literally, I think even court cases, to claim the unclaimed bonds. So traditionally, if you have unclaimed property, after X number of years, and those years have changed, I think, more recently, it used to be like 5 years. If the vendor or the custodian or whomever, the entity could not find you, locate you, and they had assets, financial assets, property, personal property, that they could not contact the owner, they have to turn it over to the state. It's called escheatment. And these assets escheat to the state, and then the state has them, and people who think they may have lost property, lost financial assets, whatever it might be, they can make a claim to the state if the state indeed has it. And typically you can just Google unclaimed property, get to the state site. So Pennsylvania, you could Google unclaimed property Pennsylvania. Make sure that you're going to a valid state treasury site. You do not have to pay anyone to help you find your unclaimed property that's with the state. You can go directly to the state and find it. And there are some states that use kind of a general database, but you should know that it's typically free. Okay? So don't give any personal information unless you know you're on a valid site. But there are a number of states that have filed to say, hey, we want to keep these savings bonds. We want them to go into our coffers. We're not going to hold out and pay them out to people. And I think Kentucky was the big case that they were trying to make. And then the U.S. Treasury tried to make a motion to dismiss it. And from what I read online, that was denied. So that could still be a case that's out there. So the reason you might want to make sure that you don't have any of these savings bonds and unclaimed property with the state is because eventually it's going to, some of these states may be, successful in making a claim that this property becomes theirs. They're even, so typically that would be like savings bonds that might have been found in bank safe deposit boxes, things like that. But they're also trying to make a claim for non-redeemed bonds that are not in their custody, that are like still with the U.S. Treasury. We don't know where that's going to go, but you can look that up on unclaimed property. But the Treasury, the U.S. Treasury, also has an online search engine that they call Treasury Hunt. So it's Treasury Hunt online search engine that will help you find matured uncashed savings bonds by entering particular information. And I believe, I didn't look it up like in depth. I think it was like in some encrypted information that you enter. And it's a way to find out instantly if you have some matured uncashed savings bonds. So certainly look for that. Another place to look, on the top of the refrigerator. That was something I think I wrote in an article like 20 years ago or something. But you wanna look in all those little cubby holes and spots that people think they're, hiding their valuables. Maybe a home safe. Maybe there is a safe deposit box. Pull those out and check because quite often they can be worth quite a bit of money. So what are savings bonds? A savings bond is a security issued by the U.S. Treasury or an authorized agent showing that money has been loaned to the U.S. government and is payable to the person to whom it is registered. So the big thing, one of the reasons so many people like savings bonds over the years is because they feel that it's backed by the full faith of the U.S. government. So very secure. Typically, we call that like a risk-free. So very secure U.S. savings bonds. And we're going to talk a little bit about the different kinds of U.S. savings bonds we have because they have kind of changed over the years. And we'll distinguish between EE bonds, I bonds, and HH bonds, which in fact they don't have anymore. But you could still have some, but they don't issue them anymore. So I want to point out, though, that the U.S. Treasury, frequent listeners know that I love government websites for all the information that they provide. And that is the case in this regard as well. And it is treasurydirect.gov is the website to go to that has so much information. And a lot of what I'm going to talk about tonight comes directly from there, because why not? But if we don't bring it to your attention, you may not know, you may not take the time, you might not realize what a great resource it is. So treasurydirect.gov. And why this has really come to the forefront recently is because of inflation and something called an I-bond. And the rates that people can get on I-bonds is is cannot be found like at any of the banks where you're typically putting your CDs or your savings accounts or your money market accounts. So we're going to talk about that as we go through the show. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY's public affairs interviews are now on major podcast platforms. This month's edition of A Closer Look features ArtsQuest president and CEO, Cassie Hilkert.
It is not every day that you're going to get a large company to relocate their headquarters to your town. What is more likely is for the arts to be able to create programming that can attract and recruit and retain those employees.
Listen to A Closer Look, available on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY, where you can also listen to podcasts on the website wdiy.org or on the WDIY app. Eric is in the studio with us this evening taking calls. If you have any, you can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can just give your question to Eric and he will bring it in to me. And the way to do that is by calling 610-758-8810, and questions can also be submitted through yourfinancialchoices.com. We are talking about savings bonds tonight. James Johnson at the board this evening had confirmed that Treasury Hunt actually has its own website, treasuryhunt.gov, and also a way to double check that you have the correct Pennsylvania unclaimed property site. James, do
you want to? Yes. In the upper left-hand corner, when you're on, again, patreasury.gov/unclaimed-property/. You'll see Stacy Garrity, the Pennsylvania treasurer, in the upper left-hand corner, and that will confirm you're on the right site.
And that website also asks for, you know, you to do like a CAPTCHA phrase as well. And you basically just have to put in your name. It's amazing. So I also often check that and tell clients to check that. And I check for clients for that. So you'd be surprised the little things that pop up there. So savings bonds. What are we talking about? Savings bonds? TreasuryDirect.gov, wonderful website. Let's briefly talk about some of the differences between these bonds. So first, EE bonds, that's generally what we've kind of seen for years, and people typically are gifting those, and that's usually what people would purchase through payroll deduction. All right. Then I bonds are inflation adjusted, and I'll talk about those in a minute. But let me go to the HH bonds because I'm just going to cover those briefly. So some people might still have HH bonds. HH bonds are no longer issued. They do pay interest every 6 months at an annual rate of 1.5%. And if you purchased your HH bonds using EE bonds, and this is typically what people would do back in the day, so they'd buy the EE bonds. The EE bonds would mature, let's say, after 30 years. And rather than redeem them and pay the tax on the interest at that time, they would use those to buy HH bonds. And they could be in any number of denominations. Quite often I see people with like $10,000 worth of HH bonds where they've kind of bunched all of their EE bonds together with all that accrued interest, and they buy the HH bonds, and then they get to defer the interest even longer. And that interest is stamped, literally stamped, on the front of that HH bonds. So the HH bond pays current interest twice a year. You pay tax on that. What you have continued to defer is that interest that you earned all those years ago on the EE bonds. Once you those HH bonds mature, at that time, then you have to report all of that deferred interest that's on the face of that bond. All right. Now, when you go to redeem HH bonds, it's not as easy as redeeming the EE bonds, where you could walk into your bank and ask to redeem the EE bonds. HH bonds actually have to be mailed to the Treasury, and you use a form called FS Form 1522. It's for like the fiscal service. So we can talk about that in a bit, because you could use that form for some of these other bonds as well. So HH bonds, the deferred interest from EE bonds, if used to purchase the HH bonds stamped on the front, don't forget about that, because boy, when you go to cash those, if you had EE bonds and there was a boatload of deferred interest in those, you could have a hefty tax situation when redeeming HH bonds that have matured. All right. Now, EE bonds, again, U.S. Treasury security, you can purchase up to $10,000 electronically. So you heard me say that you could get them through, like, you know, traditionally payroll deduction. You would get like a little paper bond. My husband did this ages ago, and he'd get his little paper bond like every couple months for, you know, his payroll deferral. And I think even Air Products did that. I don't know if they still do. Some companies might still do it. I just don't see it as much anymore. But now they don't issue paper bonds anymore. You have to buy them electronically. You can do up to $10,000 of EE bonds. They earn interest until the earlier of 30 years or redemption. And since May of 2005, they earn a fixed rate of interest, which is determined at the time of purchase. So prior to that, the interest rates were variable. So, for example, bonds issued May 1997 through April of 2005, they earn an annual rate of 1.6%, and it's set every 6 months. Now, how do you know what your interest is? How do you know how much is accrued? How much do you know, if the bond is worth today? You can calculate the value of your bond, what interest it's currently earning, what you've earned to date, when will it mature. You can figure all of that out on, guess what, treasurydirect.gov. They have a savings bond calculator, and it's so easy. You can enter the information. Now, typically, all you need, and this is usually for the paper bonds that you have, because with the electronic bonds, you would have an account set up, and I think it automatically reports that information to you. So this is really for the paper bonds, and you go in and you have to enter the series, like EE, because E's E bonds, which they used to issue, are like long gone, long matured. So you'd enter that it's an EE bond, the denomination, so if it's a $100 face, and the issue date. So let's pretend it was June of 2005. You can enter the serial number, but you don't have to. The serial number means nothing in the calculation. But why I like to enter the serial number, either for myself or for my clients, is for the tracking of the bonds. Because, you know, sometimes, you know, I have found that people will have stacks of these things. Stacks, and it's hard to kind of keep track of them, and you want to know which ones are, you know, matured or when they're maturing and which ones you're cashing, so you can use that inventory that you develop on the savings bond calculator to actually, you save it, and then you actually can go back into the site, you know, 2 years later and recalc if you can pull up that same inventory, and it'll redo it, the values. But it's a great way to understand what interest you've earned year to date and what the maturity date is. Now, just so you know, too, when you look at the issue dates, that tells you the savings bonds pay semi-annually. So if you have one that's issued June of, as I said, 2005, you know it's going to pay in June, and you know it's going to pay at 6 months, July. So June and December add 6 months, semi-annual. If it's January, it pays January and July. So you want to make sure that if you're thinking to cash it even early, that you want to hold it at least till that next semi-annual payment date. So if it pays in July, hold it till July and then redeem it so that you get the full 6 months of interest that you have earned. If you cash it in May, you're not going to get the 6 months of interest that would be, allotted on in July. All right. So there's so much information, you guys. I don't know how I'm going to be able to cover it all, but it's really interesting and really fun. And savings bonds can be fun. And I will be talking about the I-bonds, which are very interesting these days. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is yours, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1 and you can stream live with us at WDIY.org or on the WDIY app. If you have questions, Eric is in the studio. You can talk live with me on air or give your question to Eric. He'll write it down if you're not comfortable talking live, or you can send questions through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. Phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking about savings bonds tonight. So I've mentioned that EE bonds could be paper. The last paper bonds were sold in 2011. So we're just not seeing those anymore sold. You have to set up an account at treasurydirect.gov, and now they are electronic. The paper ones, you would buy a paper bond. If the face is $100, the person who bought it actually only paid $50 for it, okay? The electronic bonds, if you pay $50, it is $50. It's so confusing. I actually don't know the history of why they would issue at $50 and then make the face $100. There is something about the bonds and how they do this. And let me see if I can kind of read it, because it probably makes more sense for me to be able to read it, because it can get confusing. So first, let me tell you a little bit more about the paper bonds. So the paper bonds, the interest based is on the purchase price, not the face value. The purchase price is half that of the face value. And for electronic bonds, I said you buy them through Treasury Direct. They're sold at face value and they earn interest on that face. Once purchased, you must hold it for a minimum of 12 months. And this is true for the I bonds as well. You must hold them for a minimum of 12 months. And if cashed within 5 years, you do have a 3-month interest penalty. So basically, you give up 3 months of the interest that you earned if you cash it after a year, but before 5 years. Now, the maturities typically, are 30 years. Now, EE bonds issued between May of 2022 and October 2022, because the interest rates are set every 6 months, and we're going to learn this when I talk about I bonds as well. It's the same thing. But the EE bonds, listen to this, folks, they earn an annual interest rate of 0.1%. The ones that were issued between May and October of this year earn an annual interest rate of 0.1% for the first 20 years, compounded semi-annually. It sounds like nothing, right? But listen to this. Regardless of the rate, if you hold that bond for 20 years, here's the part I want to read so that you understand it, because the concepts might be a little hard to grasp. They're telling you they're going to pay you 0.1% for the first 20 years, but regardless of the interest rate, if you hold that bond for 20 years, the Treasury will adjust the value to double the purchase price in 20 years. So if 0.1% on your $50 bond gets you $52 after 20 years, they will adjust the value to double regardless of the interest rate. So I just kind of played with the numbers, and that equated to, like in like a $50 example, if they give you $100 in 20 years, that really equates to 3.52% annualized. So, if you factored, $50 over $50, that sounds like, 100% divided by 20, that sounds like 5%. But no, annualized, it's about 3.52% because it's not really compounded. They just give you, double. So that is something to think about, because frankly, I love this show because I get to learn so much preparing for it. I did not know that. I did not realize it. I remembered people, back in the day saying, well, my $50 bond is a $100 face. I know I'm going to get double at some point. Well, yeah, I knew that you might get double at some point, but I didn't realize the mechanics of it and why. And it was that the Treasury says that they will double the purchase price in 20 years, regardless. Now, remember I said these bonds mature in 30 years. And we talked about the 20-year rate. And if you hold it for 20 years, they're going to double it, so that's good. But what happens in the next 10 years? Well, the next 10 years, they can make the interest rate something different. Typically, they are going with, I think like the standard, whatever they typically apply to the newly issued bonds. But you don't know, and they can change that. I do also want to mention, though, for bonds purchased between 1997 and 2003, the adjustment would be made 17 years from the issue date, or 17 years. So that little window. And remember, we said bonds are about mature in 30 years. So those could still be out there. So after 17 years, those sound like they get doubled, if I'm understanding that correctly. So how does the Treasury decide on the interest rate for the EE bonds? And again, folks, this is information that is on treasurydirect.gov. It's just so much information, you have to kind of dig through it, which is what I tried to do for you, my listeners. During the original maturity period, they determine the interest rate by finding the average yields of five-year Treasury securities for the previous 6 months, and then taking 90% of that number. So I'm actually not going to ever remember that, and will probably never be able to repeat it again to anybody else. But if you are interested in knowing how they set the interest rates, that's how they do it for these EE bonds. For the rest of the bond's life, this remaining time is known as the extended maturity period, and that's where they determine the interest rate the same way as the original period, unless they announce otherwise. So that's the piece, the little asterisk, unless they announce otherwise. So I'm not sure like what would make them do something different than normal. So that is EE bonds. I want to talk a little bit about the tax savings, a little bit about some education planning, but I think I will jump to the I bonds, even though I kind of wanted to leave that toward the end of the show, because that is gripping. That's my lost leader to get you to stay listening to the show the whole time, is talking about the series I bonds. Let me give you just a little bit of a sneak peek of that before we go to our halfway break. And that is Series I savings bonds. They are based on inflation. So they have they're still a security, a U.S. Treasury security backed by the U.S. government and all that, same as EE bonds. Lots of similarities to the EE bonds. As you recall, I mentioned you have to hold it at least a year. If you cash it, if you redeem it before 5 years, you have a 3-month penalty. It has a 30-year maturity. The difference here is the initial rate on the saving on the Series I bonds is based on an inflation factor. So currently, that savings bond interest, coming right up to the halfway mark of the show, drum roll, is 9.62% annualized. Ba-boom. Right now, Think about what you're getting in the bank accounts. So this is something that is getting a lot of attention. A lot of people are talking about it. They want to know, how do they do it? Well, treasurydirect.gov can guide you through it, but it's about awareness, and don't get so excited because they put limits on it. There's only so much you can do. And so we will talk about that when we come back from our halfway point. And then I'm also going to talk about some of the tax savings around bonds and some of the other information that might be important for you to know when we do talk about savings bonds. So the phone number is 610-758-8810. We will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good afternoon. Actually, good evening. WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm James Johnson. It's 6:30. We have 77 degrees and overcast skies. Tonight's weather, a severe thunderstorm watch after 8 p.m. to 3 a.m. Thursday, scattered showers and thunderstorms, high 80. And thunderstorms with patchy fog Thursday night, low 62. WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio, your trusted local NPR member station since 1995, with many choices and real voices. And speaking of real voices, Lori Siebert with your financial choices.
Thank you, James Johnson. Welcome back to the show. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810, and you can talk live with me on air, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Eric. He'll write it down and bring it in to me, and you can also submit questions through your financial choices. .com. So tonight we are talking about savings bonds. We gave a brief overview of HH bonds, and a special note for those people who may have HH bonds out there: make sure that you are tracking the interest that's stamped on the face of them, so that when these HH bonds mature, you have done your planning and understand that you're going to have to report all of that income on your tax return. I will give you a little, some tidbits about some tax savings around savings bonds, but I'll do that in just a minute. So let's talk about the I-savings bonds. So the initial interest rate on new Series I savings bonds is 9.62, but I do want to make sure that people understand that is called the annualized rate. It doesn't mean that you're actually going to get that for the full year. So the rates are changed every May and November. So the rate was just set in May at that 9.62. That's the annualized rate. That is good for May, June, July, August, September, October. If you buy a bond in July, that rate will apply, as I understand, for 6 months. So that would be July, August, September, October, November, December. Now, if you go to buy a bond in November, the rates will reestablish and reset, and for those that are purchased in November. So it's based on when you purchase it, okay? But through bonds purchased now, May through October, will have this annualized rate of 9.62 for at least 6 months. And then at the next six-month period, it'll be reset based on the new rate that's established. So I'm going off the top of my head here, but I believe the last six-month rate was 7.12. So that 7.12 would be for people who bought bonds November of 2021 through May, April, November, December, January, February, March, April. I have to count on my fingers because I'm an accountant. So November through April will have the rate 7.12, And then the new rate starting in May, 9.62. So let's pretend someone bought a bond in November at 7.12. Then in May, the rate is reset at 9.62. So what happens is you have 7.12 for 6 months, and then you're going to have the 9.62 for 6 months. So just, you know, add those up, divide by two. That's kind of like the average rate. Now, the interest is credited to your bond at 6 months, so you do get some compounding effect on that as well. But this is based on inflation, basically, how they come up with these rates, and it could change. So it could take a tank, you know. But if you hold it at least a year, because you have to hold it at least a year, that really still is a good rate of interest. And then let's say you're going to cash it in after a year. I've told you, just like on the EE bonds, you take a little bit of a penalty hit, which is 3 months worth of interest. But imagine even taking 9 and 7, that's 16, divided by 2, that's 8%, with like a little 3 month hit, you're still probably making more than what you would in the bank. Now, here's the thing, folks, before you run out and think you got to buy these, really, you have to think and make sure, do I have money that I'm not going to need? Because if you have $10,000 in the bank and it's the only money you have in the bank, you're not going to want to go buy these because it's locked up. Like, seriously, you can't get it. So please make sure that this is what typically what I'm saying to people, because you have to do this on your own. You cannot do this through a financial advisor or anybody else. You have to set up the account yourself, your own password, and it's per Social Security number. There is a limit on these, just like when I talked about the EE bonds. I said there's a lot of similarities between EE and I. There's a $10,000 limit, and you have to buy them electronically. So you could technically buy $10,000 of EE bonds, but remember those rates I was talking about, very, very little. Unless you hold it for 20 years and then you're going to double, you know, that money. But the I bonds have a limit of $10,000. You can buy much smaller increments. In fact, I think you can buy like, you know, $50.53 was one of the examples, but up to $10,000. So, you know, typically if you're going to do this and take the time to set up an account and, you know, put your bank information in there, you know, typically you want to make it worth it. So max of $10,000 per Social Security number. So if you have a, you know, a partner, you can each do it. You'd have your own account, $10,000. You have to hold it at least a year. And then if you redeem it before 5 years, 3 month penalty. And you know, kind of different, the incentives are different when you think about EE bonds and I bonds. So the EE bonds, the incentive is, well, golly, maybe over time, what did I say? If the rate, if they double it after 20 years, the annualized rate might be like 3.52. That might seem like a decent rate for a lot of people when we think about, you know, over time, you know, maybe the last 10 years or 20 years, how what the average rate on savings accounts is. So the incentive on the EE bonds might be to keep it for 20 years. But on the I bonds, the incentive is only if we have inflation. So we don't really want inflation. But for people who buy the I bonds, you know, you're probably rooting for it a little bit because you're going to get a really great rate of return. But if we don't expect inflation to stay at these kinds of levels, and in fact, probably it will come back down over time, you know, it's kind of slowing a little bit's coming down more recently, then you can get out of it. You can get out of it. It's just, you know, you would weigh that against what other rates are out there at the time. So I think people are trying to lock in these rates right now in anticipation that some of the inflation might be coming down over time here. All right, so you can purchase up to $10,000 in I bonds each calendar year. If you exceed that limit, you think you're going to get clever, let me try it kind of a thing, the Treasury will have to process a refund for you, and it could take up to 16 weeks. So again, for people who can't afford to have any of their money locked up, it's certainly not something, you know, that you would want to try. And typically what I tell people is, if this is really money that you don't need, I have, you know, clients who keep like, you know, $200,000 in reserve when they only need maybe, you know, $60,000 in reserve. Well, this certainly could be some place to park some money that you're not needing to take advantage of some of those interest rates. So let me, one other thing about the I-bonds. So that's electronic up to $10,000. You can get I-bonds paper up to $5,000, but you have to do it with your tax refund. I don't see any other way. And again, it can be increments up to $5,000, but how many people really try to have $5,000 refunds on their tax returns? I mean, some people do, but they usually do it because it's their forced savings to pay their real estate taxes, you know, in the summer. That's usually the story I get. Yeah, we use it for our real estate taxes. And I had some people tell me they use their refunds for, you know, their vacations. They're not usually purposely causing a refund on their tax return so they can buy I-bonds. But that is one way to get paper I-bonds through refunds on your tax return. Now, let's talk about some of the, let me mention this. The I-bonds have two kinds of interest on them. They have a fixed rate. So remember I mentioned the EE bonds have a fixed rate right now, which is 0.1% annualized. The I-bonds have a fixed rate as well. And right now the I-bonds fixed rate is zero. So if inflation, you know, completely went away, your I-bond gets zero. So the fixed rate is zero. But the fixed rate for the I-bonds, from what I read on treasurydirect.gov, will always be lower than the fixed rate on an EE bond. So think about this. If the fixed rate on the EE bond is 0.1%, how do you get lower? It's zero. So the fixed rate on the I-bonds is zero, and then the inflation rate is variable. It's calculated twice a year. It's based on changes in the non-seasonally adjusted consumer price index. For all urban consumers, it's the CPI-U for all items, including food and energy. Let's see. And that's basically it. So again, I'm not going to probably remember that either. The interest is earned on the bond every month, but it's only compounded semi-annually, which is twice a year. The interest the bond earned in the previous 6 months is added to the bond's principal value. Then interest for the next 6 months is calculated using this adjusted principal. The interest and principal are paid to you when you cash the bond. And again, you can use the savings bond calculator at treasurydirect.gov to calculate that. Let me just go over cashing the bonds really quickly, and then I'll go to the tax consequences of those. You can cash paper savings bonds, because remember, there's still a lot of paper savings bonds out there. That is EE bonds, and I think some of the I bonds used to be paper as well. You can take those to your local bank with proof of identity and cash those in. And did you hear what I said, though? EE bonds and I bonds. HH bonds, a whole nother story. So the EE bonds, and I mentioned that at the beginning of the show, so you can take your EE bonds and I bonds, the paper ones, to the bank, and they will redeem them. You're usually then going to get a tax document from the bank. So it would be, you know, major bank, here, Lori Siebert is your interest, and they report it and they indicate that it's U.S. Treasury direct obligation, savings bond interest, whatever the description is on the 1099 INT. And why that is important is because U.S. Treasury interest is taxable for federal purposes, but it's not taxable for state or local purposes. So I'll go over more of that in just a bit. So you can take those into the bank. The HH bonds I mentioned have to be mailed in to the U.S. Treasury. You mail them to the Treasury Bureau of the Fiscal Service. So it's called the Bureau of Fiscal Service, and there is a form that you have to complete, whether it's HH bonds or if you're mailing in EE paper bonds. If you don't want to take them to the bank, you can complete this form, FS Form 1522. It's on the treasurydirect.gov website, FS Form 1522, and you have to fill out all the pertinent information, your personal information, the serial number of the bond, the description of the bond, etc. And then you have to have a bank representative confirm your identity. So you show your ID, they sign off, blah, blah, blah. You can then mail those bonds into the U.S. Treasury through the Bureau of the Fiscal Service. And I think it's in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And I had a client just recently do this, and he did it through the Postal Service and did, receipt. Confirmation of, you know, that they received it. All right. It only took 3 days. So that was pretty good. Okay, folks, we are at our last break. When we come back, I'll talk about some of the tax consequences, the tax reporting, and some tax savings opportunities. If you have questions, there's still time. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1 FM, also available to stream live at WDIY.org or on the WDIY app. Podcasts of prior shows are also available at WDIY.org and at yourfinancialchoices.com. Tonight we're talking about savings bonds. We haven't had any questions this evening, but there's so much information, and these are so much fun, actually. I really think there are probably a lot of people out there who do have savings bonds. You've forgotten about them, or your parents forgot about them. I myself had a number of savings bonds for my own children that were gifted to them, and so I had them cash some of them. We valued them. We saw what the interest rates were. But what was happening is my kids weren't working yet. They were in very low tax brackets, and I thought this might be the time to cash them. So in certain circumstances, some we have not cashed, but some definitely made sense. Okay, so we have a question from Greg in Bethlehem about I-bonds, and he said, what happens during a deflation period? Yeah, the rates go down. Yeah, it could go down to nothing. That's why, you know, I bonds, you really need to watch and pay attention. And so if you have that account set up at treasurydirect.gov with the Treasury, when you set up your own account, you'll see the value and you'll see the rates that you're getting at that current period. So let's pretend you bought it in October or November when the rate was 7.12 and in November, and then you now have one that you bought this year for 9.62. Well, your old bond is going to adjust after 6 months, and your new bond will be that rate for 6 months, and then the next reset is November. So now if inflation goes down, and it's based on that CPI-U, if it goes down to 6%, then your rate also is going to go down then for the next 6 month period. All right. Yep. So that's why you have to know that you're going to hold it at least a year. But after that, you would just take a 3 month interest penalty on it. But it still could be an attractive rate, even so. So in rising inflation, these can be very attractive. In deflation, not as attractive. But it could still be good because, I mean, if we go down from, you know, the 9.62 to 6, you still could be earning more than you might get in the bank. All right. All right. So let's talk about the taxes a little bit. What I want to mention about the savings bonds interest, I've already talked at length about the HH bond interest, which is the interest stamped on the front of the bonds. So the current interest rate on HH bonds, I think, was like 1.5, I said. So if you're getting a 1099 from the U.S. Treasury each year on reporting interest, then it could be HH bonds, and that's the current interest. When they mature, you have to report all that other interest. It is taxable for federal purposes. It's not taxable for state purposes. If you're someone who prepares your own tax return and you don't put it in the software correctly, or you handwrite your tax return and you don't think about it and you just take your interest from page one of the return and put it on your state return, you might miss that it's tax-free. So Pennsylvania, 3.07%, we're saving income tax on the U.S. savings bond interest. So you want to make sure that you do that correctly. Now, there are some options in how we report the interest, but I will tell you that for the most part, people report it the same way. And it's the value of deferring paying the taxes on the current interest on the savings bonds. I'll talk about that in just a moment. I have a question from Marcelo. Said, I was able to save money from the national student loan payment pause. Are savings bonds a good way to save my money? Are there any better options for this money? Well, Marcelo, what I would say is, yeah, you were able to, they had the pause on the student loan interest for some time now. And if some people continued to make the payments, even though they weren't charging interest. So you could work down the principal of your loan with no interest cost. That was one way people still could have done something. Some people paused and weren't making the payments because no interest was accruing. If you took that money and accumulated it in a bank account, you might have gotten a tiny bit of interest on that. But what I would say, back to the point about this is really for money, I would say, that you're not going to need. Now, the student loan interest was just a pause. It wasn't completely, you know, eliminated. So I would say at such time, that I don't think they've started charging interest again. I think the pause has continued. I don't remember the dates because they keep moving on. Then you might want to take that chunk of money and put it toward your student loan if the interest rates are high on those student loans. I usually tell clients to make an Excel spreadsheet of the balances and the payments and the interest rate and really work on paying off the higher interest rate ones first. What will be much more interesting will be to see if they forgive that $10,000, which they're trying to get through for so many people. That could be a big savings. But I probably would put it toward the cost of my debt before I, you know, save. 9.62 is a pretty good rate. So if you could do it for a year, if you really have a lot of extra money, but generally, if you got student loans, it's telling me you probably didn't have extra money. So I would probably just put it toward those loans and get rid of them. It feels so good to get rid of student loans because I myself had them, and it was a memorable day to be finished with those. So let me tell you a little about reporting. Thank you for the question, Marcelo. It was a good question. Maybe your parents could take money and put it into a savings bond for you, because you can buy these for other people, by the way. The I-bonds, you can buy them for other people. You just need their social security number, I think. So the interest on savings bonds, here's the funny thing. The IRS tells us that we can elect to report the interest each year if we want to, even though we didn't get the money. So remember the EE bonds and the I bonds, they don't pay until we redeem them. The IRS says you can elect to report that interest income annually. I, in my entire career, only saw this once. And a parent was doing it for their children and recognizing the interest because the kids had no, you know, taxable income. Occasionally, that could come back to bite them because of the kiddie tax. If the child ends up with too much investment income and then it gets taxed at the parents' rates, that wasn't the case for this situation, but it could come back to bite them. But then what happens is you have to keep track of all the interest that you've reported each year, because when you eventually redeem the bonds and you get your 1099 INT, it reports the entire amount of the interest. And you might say, but wait a minute, I already reported that interest every year. What's the deal? Well, the IRS didn't know, or the Treasury or the bank, wherever you cash the bonds, they didn't know that you were reporting it every year. So you have to keep track of that. And then if the 1099 INT says, you know, $250 and you were reporting it every year for, you know, 20 years or 30 years, whatever it was, then you have to back it out and you say previously reported on the tax return. And you, so you show 250 less 250, boom, it comes out zero. So not usually what we see. We usually see people reporting it once they redeem them, either at maturity or the earlier of maturity or when you redeem them. Now, here's another time where we might see interest getting reported on a tax return sooner than redemption. And this is something I've actually done many times, and it is when we have a bond owner pass away. And when they die, we do a calculation and we say they have all this savings bond interest. We can actually calculate the accrued interest up to the date of death and make a special election on the decedent's tax return to report that interest income through the date of death on the tax return. It's called the 454A election. So section 454A election, where we can report the interest accrued to date of death for the decedent on their final tax return. And why would we do that? Well, we might do it if the person died, you know, January 2nd, and they have absolutely no income and need to use a standard deduction of, you know, whatever it is for a single person in my story here, $14,500 or something like that. If they had no other income, they died early in the year, that might be a great thing to do. And then the beneficiaries of the estate, or maybe it's a payable on death bond, then that beneficiary, when they go to cash the bond, redeem the bond, maybe the next year or 5 years later or whatever, they have to have kept track of the accrued interest that was reported to date of death on that bond, and then they have to subtract it out in the final reporting. They have to say previously reported under section 454A. So in my story, if the interest was $250 up through date of death, and that when I redeem it, you know, the next year it's $270, and my 1099 INT test says 270, I say 270 less 250 reported previously under section 454. So that's where we sometimes see it. But generally, people defer the interest. Another way to save taxes on savings bonds is there is an education tax exclusion. And again, in my entire career, and maybe it's the kind of clients I have, I don't know, because I've only seen it like one time where someone's taken advantage of it. There's an education tax exclusion. It permits qualified taxpayers to exclude from their gross income all or part of the interest paid upon the redemption of eligible savings bonds when the bond owner pays qualified higher education expenses at an eligible institution, or it could be for other qualified education costs. So it depends on your income. So for example, if your modified adjusted gross income, that's page one income with some adjustments, if it is less than $98,200 if you're single or head of household or qualifying widower, or $154,800 for married filing joint. This is 2021 numbers. If your income is below those amounts, married filing separate people don't get to do this. So if your income is below those amounts and you have savings bonds, and let's say you cashed the savings bonds, they're worth $10,000 and the redemption and the interest on them was $8,000, and you took $10,000 and paid it toward your child's tuition, then you could exclude the $8,000 of interest. If my kid's not in college yet, but I have a 529 account, that's a qualified education expense in this circumstance. I could take $10,000 and put it into the 529 account and exclude the interest. Again, there are some other limitations. You have to have been 24 years old when you purchased the bonds. There are certain, time restraints. So I just want to mention there are certain rules around it. You have to inform yourself. I can't get into all those details tonight because we only have a minute left. But I hope that this was valuable information about savings bonds. I hope I've, piqued some people's interest and curiosity about checking into savings bonds. Maybe parents have or grandparents have, or maybe you got those savings bonds for your kids and you can't completely forgot about them. So go check all the nooks and crannies in the house. Find out if you have any. Go value them on treasurydirect.gov using the savings bond calculator. Understand the tax consequences. See if you would qualify for some of the education tax savings as well. Lots of information, but in particular, check out those iSavings bonds. Really some attractive rates currently. Just know the rules and know what would apply to you. So thanks, listeners. Thank you, James Johnson, for being here. Thank you, Eric, for being here. Next week, I am going to have attorney James Ruggiero on the show, and we are going to talk about Trust 101. We look forward to having Jim back. We haven't had him in a while. We'll be I've just forgotten my closing remarks. Always be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week. Thank you.